Hello, and welcome to On the Irregular with Java Bere, a podcast where I chat to women from all walks of life about their own unique creative journey, how they got here, how their story has shaped their creative work, what they've learned, what has helped them, and where they plan to go from here. It's an irregular journey for so many of us, and I am delighted to offer a platform to share these fascinating stories and wells of wisdom. This week, I'm chatting to Carissa Tanton, an illustrator from North Wales, currently living off-grid in central Portugal. Carissa began with ambitions to be a doctor, then a psychologist, and then, after a life-changing time living in Paris, became an illustrator, despite having been labelled terrible at art at school. Her linear monochrome work is minimalist and precise, often featuring flowers, the sea, and pop stars drinking tea. Please join me in our conversation, where we touch upon working in Whole Food shops, mindfulness, and the con that is the British housing market. And of course, so much more. Thank you so much for joining me and agreeing to talk to me about your creative journey. So Carissa is an illustrator from North Wales, now based in central Portugal, where you're creating what looks like a mini paradise on off-grid land. So welcome to the podcast. I'm really interested. This podcast is about kind of exploring each person's, in this case women, for this series journey, and I'm particularly interested in people with a background that wasn't originally training as artists or what you know, or a photographer or in textiles, whichever they're, you know, where they're at now, because I think it's really interesting to explore how that's informed your journey. And also I think about the mental and emotional hurdles sometimes that it, you know, that it takes to get to that point. So you know, please take the floor, Carissa. I'd love to know, tell me a bit more about your background, for example, like what do your parents do, and growing up, did you know that you wanted to be an illustrator?
I was terrible at art in school, actually. My dad's quite creative, so I kind of, that was my only experience of art in my life, is that he used to draw and paint, and I had one of his paintings up on my wall. But he joined the RAF in his late 20s, just as we were born, so he kind of very much put that aside. And we moved around a lot, and then I ended up going to boarding school when I was about 8, and had quite a formal education down that path. And yeah, I was quite good at school, actually, and my original plan was to study medicine. It was a very different life to what I currently am living now, when I was sort of thinking about like career and all that kind of stuff. I was in school, in boarding school, till I was 16. And then just before I was about to take my A levels, although I was going to do the international baccalaureate because I wanted to get into medical school, I decided to go to the local college and just kind of get out of the bubble of private education. And I think that was kind of where the unraveling of this formal education really started to sort of begin. And it was doing the creativity action service aspect of the international baccalaureate. So I was doing very formal subjects too. I did psychology as my humanities, but I started going to art, the art classes with my friends who were studying art as part of the creativity aspect of the IB. And that's when I first started dabbling in that. And I had a friend, my friend Anne Harad, who is an amazing portrait artist. She works with pencil. She was just so amazing, and I'd never seen someone who could draw like that, and I think that really inspired me. That it was just kind of a little dabble into art then, and I still loved the more formal subjects, and I was studying psychology and English literature in the IB, and that's kind of the path I chose when I suddenly went, you know what, I don't want to be a doctor, I don't even like chemistry anymore. But it was still very much you have to go to university was the next step. So I'm still
Where did
stuck.
you study?
I went to Aberystwyth. When I went, it was so much cheaper as a Welsh person to stay at a Welsh university, to go to a Welsh university. I think the fees were a third if you stayed in Wales. So that my decision on what university was very much informed by that. But Aberystwyth is a very small cut-off town, and by the end, I was just very ready to get out of there and very ready to get out of formal education. But what I think with going to Aberystwyth was I actually got a part-time job in an organic food shop whilst I was studying, and I feel like that had more of an impact on me than the actual studying, because I was meeting a lot of people that were living a more alternative life, and health food shops attract interesting characters.
Yeah, there's so many parallels here because when I moved to Manchester and I didn't go to uni, I also got a job in a health food shop. And it was kind of while I was trying to, because I couldn't go to uni here because I'd grown up in Spain for most of my life, so I would have had to pay foreign tuition fees. So I just kind of spent some time and went to the and worked in this health food shop, and that was an education in itself.
Yeah, the lady who owned the shop, her husband had an organic farm on the outskirts of Aberystwyth, and so when I graduated and had no idea what to do with myself, I went and woofed with them for a couple of months, just whilst I tried to figure stuff out. And again, I feel like that was a real big that had quite an impact on my life, I think, as well, and where I was sort of choosing.
Guess what I did after working at the Whole Foods shop? I did exactly.
Are we just mirroring each other?
I had no idea you did that. Yeah, I went and woofed in the south of France for a few months. And same, I feel like it kind of changed my life and set things in motion for years to for years ahead. It had an influence that I didn't realise how long it would be, because then John and I moved out to France years later. And a lot of it was based on that time woofing, because it's also being in somebody else's environment, isn't that so? It's so just, yeah, you just learn so much. It's an education in seeing the world through different eyes, and especially if you've not grown up working on a farm or, I kind of I'd spent time in nature, but in a very different way. Working with nature is just life changing. And that's really, so it was in Wales that you went.
Yes, yeah, and yeah, it was just kind of not really knowing what to do with myself, because I think kind of like I was saying, you're on this sort of like treadmill of where you're going in life, and then you sort of take a bit of a tangent, and suddenly there's no map, and you're a bit lost and not knowing what to do. So I think that decision just arose from not really wanting to just move back to North Wales to home. I didn't know what I wanted to do with myself, so. Yeah, but going back on what you said with the kind of influence it has on you, because it's not just the experience, but it's this kind of like different lifestyle that someone's living. When you're in school, you're never given the option that, oh, you can, go and grow organic vegetables if that's what you want to do with your life. Like, you're just given these very like, doctor, teacher. I mean, these are such important career paths, so I can understand that, but it's just we can't all be doctors and teachers. Some of us need to be artists or
Yeah.
organic farmers. So.
Yeah, and it's kind of, I guess I feel really embarrassed now when I think about how much I accepted in my head some kind of hierarchy of where people stood in terms of status. Doctors and because like science is so applauded, but growing vegetables is seen as, well, it's not by everybody, but can often just be seen as a really basic, simple thing, and it's not. It's a like it's so hard being a successful grower, and so the wealth of knowledge and experimenting and being in tune with the seasons, depending on how you grow things, of course. But yeah, I think in school, I think that's like you said. Yeah, it's just not. It's not offered up as an option, really, and it's so archaic. It's so far removed from where we need to be, I think, like as a, like you said, there needs to be a bit of everything.
And I think now I like sometimes have this imagining of all the different lives you could have led because you have all these decisions you make along the path. And I'm sure those different lives get bigger and more varied as you get older. But yeah, I think of my life as like me being a doctor now, and I'm just like, whoa, how would I have handled that? Like that much pressure and work and the like the emotional impact of experiencing that, I think I would have cracked. So,
Yeah,
it's like, yeah.
and that's interesting because that's something that you've learned with age because you know yourself and you've spent more time with yourself. But yeah, how on earth can you know that when you're 16 or 17 and making those choices?
Yeah, I think it's crazy how much pressure we put on people to make those kind of decisions at sort of 16, 17. And that, like, if I was to go back again, I would so take a gap year. I think it would have been so good for me to kind of have that experience of figuring myself out a little bit more because you just don't know. So you're kind of just making these decisions based on, well, for me personally, I think there are some people that it's very well suited to. We're all different, aren't we? But yeah, for a lot of people, I think that there should be an encouragement to step out of formal education and see where you want to go and see what life looks like outside of school.
Yeah, no, I think that's it, and also that yeah, the understanding that, like you say, that the world isn't, or that the school isn't the world. What you're experiencing in school, and some people are good at some stuff, and so then, I think why I always had a tendency to compare myself, and I thought, well, I'm not as good as that person that I'm at school with, so there's no place for me in the world, and it's about, yeah, being able to step away from that and understand the world is vast and there is so much space to develop and explore and space for everybody. It's not just this, essentially, like school is just a tiny little system that, you're just kind of ticking boxes and have to get through it in a way. And if you're lucky, then you can, some teachers you can come across, a teacher that you really connect with, and that can really open up your world. And I think that happened to me with a couple of teachers, especially I think literature teachers. I think they really tapped into something because I really loved reading the same as you, and that kind of opened up worlds to me. But that doesn't always happen. You don't always connect. You don't always find a teacher that you connect with. So it can be kind of, it can cripple your self-confidence, I think.
Absolutely. It is this very, tick box exercise and the way that the exams are done and stuff, that it's just kind of like you have to be good at these certain things. And if you're not, then what? It's they don't seek out past that. Like, okay, so you're not very good at maths, but you're amazing at drawing, or you're very empathetic, or you're good at organizing. It's not, it's just like, well, how do we get you to be better at maths then? Because you have to do this. And it's like, the most useless thing in the world. Like, if they taught us how credit cards work, the mortgages, maths would have been the most useful subject, but they don't. I don't need to know how a blooming triangle is
I have
calculated.
never understood this, and now that I've got kids of my own, I'm really worried about it because I don't want them to learn about long equations because it's going to be of no use to them unless they become mathematicians. But surely, they can learn about equations further down the line once they've decided that. Makes far more sense, like you say, learn about mortgages, credit cards. I still don't understand what VAT is.
Me neither. I've tried to like learn a bit now. Like, I think money education is so important that I have tried to do it myself. But yeah, VAT is not one I've gone down yet.
So circle back to, so you woofed at this farm in Wales, and that was a significant experience for you. And then, so what steps did you take after that?
So I was there for a couple of months, living on my own in a little caravan, and mostly listening to radio for. I think just after a couple of months, I was kind of a bit lonely, probably. So then I did decide to move back to North Wales, back home, and try and look for a job. And I think I was home for not very long, maybe 6 weeks. And I applied to this au pair website. So I got an offer to work in a town called Market Drayton in Shrewsbury, and with looking after these four girls. And I just was like, oh yeah, okay, I'll do that. And I think everyone was like, what are you doing? Where are you going? Why are you moving to this random town in Shrewsbury? And it was a lovely experience. It was just a bit strange. I was like, I don't really know what I'm doing. I was living in this family's garage in the side of their house, taking the girls back to and from school, and I did that for about 9 months. And I don't know. I think I was just a bit lost. Like I had no idea what to do with myself, because I studied psychology and English literature. I wasn't motivated to study any further, which kind of to progress in either of those you have to. I can't even remember what I was thinking I wanted to do. I was just, I guess, trying to make a bit of money and see where life led me.
And there's so much pressure, I think, in your early 20s, or that kind of around 22, to know and to be on the track and to be successful really quickly.
I was still on this au pair website, and as this job was tying up with this other family, I got a message from a family in Paris asking if I wanted to go au pair for them. So of course, in my early 20s, I was just going with the tide of what life pointed me towards, and just was like, yeah, why not? So then I just moved to Paris, didn't know anyone, didn't speak French, and lived with this family and looked after their kid. It's funny because it was such a different family setup as well. So I do think au pair, it's really hard work, and it's definitely made me hesitant to have my own children, because I was so exposed to the way it kind of was impacting people's lives, and how they kind of, I don't know, I don't want to sound negative. I'm
No,
not negative.
don't worry.
But it was just like I could just see like how much they just become parents and everything else kind of.
They had a nanny.
I don't know how people do it. It is one of the hardest jobs. From the outside looking in, it looks terrifying.
It's interesting, isn't it, as well, like, because like you just said, they just become parents, and I think now that I am a parent, I yeah yeah and I think that's the one thing that I was absolutely terrified of becoming, was just becoming a parent, and didn't think I ever would. But you kind of can't not. The kids need that, and it's totally all consuming. But then I think that's also what's kind of spurred me on to find my own stuff, because I just couldn't. It was too much for me mentally to be pure parent.
I think it can be a really, I speak from no experience, but it does seem that a lot of people actually find becoming a parent actually opens up a new part of themselves to be discovered. Like that's all we're doing really, isn't it? Through life is kind of discovering ourselves more and more. So I think it does have a very like powerful impact on your life. But from when I was au pairing, it was within families that were living very in quotes normal lives, in that they had their careers and then they had the children, and then there was nothing else left. Whereas I think when I can see from like for you, for example, or my sister who has her own business, like the structures you can build around having a family when it's more, there's more freedom, is so much better than what, this whole career path that we're talking about. It doesn't have a place for kids in it. So that's when it becomes too much. I feel like I'm going off on a bit of a ramble.
Really true. I mean, it kind of, I feel like sometimes when you start talking about stuff, you start realizing that everything just needs to be broken down and started from scratch, because the fact that, like you're saying, like, you know, when you've already got a career in place and then you have kids and then there's not, you know, that you've got the career and you've got the kids, there's no space for anything else. That's a flaw in the system. That's a flaw in society, that for some reason we try and shoehorn having kids into the rest of our lives, when actually the only reason the society exists is because people are having kids. So surely let's like make the infrastructure more supportive and just be easier for everybody. You know, like there's so many flaws with childcare and the fact that it's no longer a kind of a, you know, they say it takes a village, but you don't have that village really anymore because so many are so isolated. And it's like, yeah, God, there's just so much that isn't working. And of course, you know, you're going to feel a bit cautious about having kids when you see a society that doesn't support it at all, that for some reason expects you to have children. Of course, you're going to, you know, by 30 at least be considering having kids. TikTok, you know, your body clock, but then at the same time, we're not going to support you at all, and then we're going to penalize you for wanting to prioritize your children over your work.
Yes, and it goes back to this whole like being defined by your job. But if you then put your job aside to become a mother, but that's not valued. So how do you balance that? You know, it just terrified me to be honest.
You found another job during the week to, because I was going to say that, did you meet people? How did you enter society in Paris?
Yeah, so to begin with, before I got the second job, I was there's like Facebook groups for other au pairs, so we were all kind of meeting up. But it was just, yeah, it was just very much like the same people as me. But I got this job, and it's such an amazing place called Cozy, owned by this guy from New Zealand. And he just, it seemed like he just found this community of expats who had moved to Paris and needed like looking after. And we would just make sandwiches and support each other. Oh, it was just such a dynamic and amazing place. Oh, it was just such a defining couple of years living there. And like learning another language as well, I think is really good for the creative brain. And yeah, one of my friends, she'd studied fine art, and she was working in a gallery as well. And I used to go around to hers for a glass of wine, and then she'd be like, let's draw, let's like draw together. And that's where I fell in love with drawing. And she used to take me to lots of art galleries and things. So yeah, it was my friend Vito who made me fall in love with art.
Oh, so that, I mean, that can be more romantic. It's like, so I flew, you know, I ran away to Paris and then I fell in love with art and drawing. And I think that's so interesting, just what you were saying about how you think that learning another language is really good for the creative brain, because I've always found that it's something that I really cherish, is because I went to nursery in France, so that's kind of, French is kind of always in, like, in my subconscious. I'm not fluent, but when I've spent time there, it comes back to me. And then I grew up in Barcelona, and so I speak Spanish and Catalan. And one of the things that I really love about learning other languages and knowing them is that you see things in different ways, because there are different expressions, you know, like there are expressions in different languages that don't exist in, for example, like there's an expression in Spanish that doesn't exist in English, that's a flor de piel, which means on the direct translation is on the flower of the skin. So, which means, I guess, like it's hypersensitive, like right there on the, like all the feelings that are right at the top and that are really raw. But the image of on the flower of the skin is so evocative to me, and I would never have come across that, you know, if I didn't learn the language. So there's like kind of all these. It's like you discover all these little surprises in languages, don't you? And it just, and like, along with, you know, learning more about the culture and, I guess, yeah, exercising your brain in a different way. But I can really see how powerful that must have been in hand with, exploring drawing and falling in love with art at the same time. That's like such a romance.
Yeah, I think with the language thing, I read a study and they found that if you could speak more than one language, you were better at problem solving because you were already used to being presented with more than one option. So it's like when you have a bed, you also have, other words for it or other descriptions. So that. But I think what you were saying about this kind of like way to express yourself in another language, it you feel like a different, like when I speak French, because to be understood, you really have to try and do the accent. So you kind of feel like you're putting on an act a little bit. So it kind of feels like you're this like new person. And I think that's where that creativity kind of flourishes with learning a new language. I'm trying to learn Portuguese now, which the pronunciation is so hard, and I'm really having to put it on to the point it's quite hilarious. But I can feel that kind of, yeah, that opening up again of like some other mindset. And yeah, the way to express yourself, like you said, with this phrase, or there's like a French word which is like profiter, which is like to make the most of something. And I remember when I came back to the UK from France, I really struggled to find a replacement for that word that I could just throw out. And then I was like, oh, profit, oh no, you don't know what I'm saying. Like, I don't know how to tell you how to have to make the most of this. So
So you're in Paris, you're falling in love with drawing and art, and I just love the image of you sitting drinking wine with your friend and drawing by candlelight, I imagine it.
it was a very like that kind of experience. And she introduced me to this book called Drawing on the Right Side of the Brain. I think it's the right side of the brain. So we were doing a lot of the practices from that. So where you look at your hand without looking at the paper and things like that. And these are practices I still come back to now because I just think they're so good for getting yourself out of perfectionism and just creating. But yeah, so she kind of introduced me to that, and we would just sit there, yeah, drawing our hands or
That's really that's great that that was kind of your starting point in some ways, that you were learning how to be free with it before learning like rules or like when you approach like life drawing and proportions and all of that. So that's how it needs to start with, really, doesn't it? Like freeing it up and just playing, I guess.
Yeah, because I like obviously I've never properly gone to art school, but I do wonder kind of how things are approached there, because yeah, that book and those practices in it, I think, should be the beginning point for anyone who wants to like create.
Did you then, was it, did you start to think, oh, maybe this could be something that I could spend most of my time doing? Because I guess that's essentially then what a job is, isn't it? It's like, right, what do I want to spend most of my days doing and earn some money so that I can feed myself so that I carry on doing what I love doing?
So my sister actually fell pregnant whilst I was in Paris, and that was the one thing I always said would make me come home, was to be an auntie and support my sister. So after a couple of years, it was like, right, time to go back to North Wales. And I was just like, God, what am I going to do in North Wales? Because it's such a different place, obviously, from Paris, and there's just no careers there or anything. I didn't know what I was going to do. But I moved back and I took over my sister's job because she went on maternity pay working in a hotel in a bar. And at the same time, my dad was retiring from the RAF. So we decided both to go to college together to study art and design. So yeah, so then I went back to to college whilst working in a bar. And another thing that I'd fallen in love with in Paris was wine. And I was working in a bar, and that I sort of developed this interest in in learning more and more about wine. So I was kind of thinking that's the career path I would go down. I would become like a sommelier and then draw in my free time. And yeah, so whilst I was doing so I was doing college, I was working in a bar, I worked in a few other different bars, did my wine spirit level training. Went and did a exam in London. and so I was like, right, that's going to be my career path. I finally found what I want to do. Drink wine and draw. So what happened was I started drawing. I'd got really interested in minimalism at the same time as I was doing this, which is where my style kind of came from, because I was like, how can I make this as simple as possible? So I was like, pen and paper. so I'd started drawing that, and so my sister has her own business. She works online, selling and buying mostly like secondhand things. So I'd seen that he was doing this, and I thought, oh, well, maybe I could do that with a few drawings and do some prints, just as kind of like a side project. And that kind of just slowly started building. And then that, I think that's when I was actually making money from it, was actually when I thought, oh, this could be my job.
Yeah, it was just something that you just kind of tried and then it just took off.
I think I'm really lucky in that respect, that it kind of just came about from without the pressure of it needing to be an income. It was just kind of, what am I going to do with this work I'm creating? I should probably sell it.
That's just so organic, isn't it? That it just it's like it just happened. And because some of your prints are extremely popular, the series of pop stars drinking tea, like the Beatles and Elton, and you've done a Stevie Nicks one, haven't you, as well?
I love her.
And they are so simple but so perfect. Like also the fact that you've managed to get the likeness of them with such simple lines is just amazing, because getting the likeness is hard enough, but to do it with one line.
It's not easy. I'm still like, oh, how am I going to do this next person? yeah, I think I was just really lucky with that I think this is the thing that made it easier for me, is I've kind of accidentally stumbled upon, not stumbled upon, but I drew the Beatles drinking tea as like, it was actually for a submission for this magazine project, and it didn't work out. So then I turned that into a print. And obviously that's something that already has a lot of fame around it, that I think that's why it took off, and made me realize like, oh, this is actually, you can make money doing this. So I think I was lucky that it kind of tapped
It's a really
into
good kind of
a
marriage of
market that was already
like
there,
a
but it
commercial
was always.
idea, but it's also just really original and attractive and cool and a really great piece of art. It's I can totally see how that took off. It's brilliant.
Is that, but I think for me as well, this is a completely different topic now, but so because that kind of took off, and then I had all these questions of, am I allowed to be making this drawing? And then it was kind of brought up a lot of imposter syndrome for me, of being like, oh, is it because I can actually draw, or is it because it's something that's already popular? So that's been a different emotional rollercoaster to.
As in, like, are you allowed to do a likeness of the Beatles? Like, legally, do you mean? Or.
Yeah, well, that kind of came up, and it's something people ask me and things as well, and it is a very grey area actually. So that's been quite an interesting. Yeah,
Last person you want on your back is Paul McCartney and his lawyers.
as far as I understand, is that you can't actually copyright a face, so you are allowed to create a likeness of someone, but that person also has every right to ask you to remove it. So I'm not going to be taken to prison. But they could be, and of course that's their right to ask me to remove it.
About it. But God, that is really interesting. Yeah, having to take all of those, of course, that into consideration. So how was that? Because how long have you been working now as an illustrator?
So I did my first print on Etsy about 4.5 years ago now.
That is not long. That is not long at all.
Yeah, it feels well, thinking about it this morning, I was like, that feels like a really, like, that's the longest amount of time I've ever dedicated to one job.
Yeah, when I say that, like, it's not long, I don't mean like, you know, I mean simply like the where you've got to in 4.5 years, you know, in the grand scheme of things, it's impressive. That's what I mean, is it's really impressive. And also like your skill from like, that's just wow. I find that really interesting that you could, you know, like you're saying, like it's not something that you've kind of that you studied as a child, or like were particularly or thought you were good at, whatever good means, you know, at school, and then discovered it through this, you know, through moving to Paris, and then it's become something that you not only love, but it's also your livelihood. That's I love the unexpected stories. Wow.
It's definitely unexpected. I actually had a friend reach out from back in our university days, and we'd fallen out of touch. And she said, oh, she was like, oh, I just had thought of you, and I don't have Facebook anything, so I typed your name into Google. And she was like, I can't believe you're an illustrator. How did this happen? Tell me your path. I don't think anyone would have. But yeah, so I'd had the idea that hospitality was kind of the thing for me, and then realised that it really wasn't. And then that's when I kind of took it a bit more seriously to be like, maybe I can make something of this illustration path. And that's when I started considering doing a master's in illustration. But things just picked up, and I think because my style had been simplified and was kind of recognizable and easily adaptable, I started like getting commission work coming in for magazines, and I illustrated a book as well. But I kind of was like, I don't think I need to go to university because I'm kind of already doing what I'm hoping university would give me. And I did some life coaching at the time, actually, when I was trying to make this decision about university, with Catherine Ho. She's brilliant. And I'd say something, and then it would just be reflected back at me. So I had to answer that question myself, which was it's been such an amazing tool that she's given me. It's like I can answer these questions, but it was very confronting at the time. But yeah, she helped me to really unpick why I'd thought I wanted to go do this master's in illustration, and kind of figured out that really I just wanted, first of all, the kind of space to create in, which is why I then went and like found a studio space. But it was very much down to this whole, I cannot call myself an illustrator until I have a degree. Like, who am I to say I'm an illustrator? Yeah, that was a big like motivation for it. And when I realized that, I was like, oh, okay, that's probably not a good reason to go get into more debt.
Wow, so that's so I guess it's about finding the answers within you, that it's there within you, you know, you just have to listen to your motivations, and then I guess question them.
Absolutely. And it's the thing is, like, no one knows your life as well as you do. So why does anyone else have the right to answer the questions of what you should be doing with it? And I think, kind of, from the things we've spoken about so far, it is so much that it's people telling you what you should do and what you want, and this is the path you should go on. And it just really gave me that opportunity to be like, oh, it's up to me which path I walk down, actually. Yeah, it was brilliant.
That's so powerful. That reminds me of a time, a conversation I had with a really, really close friend of mine who I hold it like in very high regard, and I really respect his opinions. And I think it was when Griff had just been born, and I or shortly after, and I decided I wasn't going back to my job, because it wouldn't work with having a little one, and we wanted to have another baby. And so I was like, right, well, this is now I need to figure out, I need to make some money, but I also want it to be something that I've kind of been doing for, you know, that I naturally love doing. And I'd been selling vintage for a long time, But I also knew, I was like, I really want to get back into drawing. And I have this feeling, like, because I'd started drawing again and I'd started doing little designs and I'd always made Christmas cards. And I felt really embarrassed to say it. So, but I think people would maybe buy these, you know. And I sat down, we were sat at dinner and I said, what do you think I should do? Should I choose either, should I carry on just selling vintage, or do you think I should pursue like exploring illustration? And he just kind of went, well, I mean, the vintage has been working, so just keep doing the vintage, because that's, you know. And I felt, and I never let him know this, but I felt completely crushed. And because I'd just given up this decision to him, that's not his responsibility to make that decision for me. Like, also, like, what business did I have putting that pressure on him to make that choice for me? You know, it took about 2.5 years for me to summon up the courage to then consider it again. And that, like, I feel so sad that I just allowed myself to not listen and to not trust that I knew what I wanted to do. I knew what I wanted to do years ago, but I wouldn't allow myself to do it because I don't know, I think I was expecting somebody to come along and say, you need to do this. And then I guess what? Yeah, then if it went wrong, I could blame them. I don't know, maybe that's what.
It's that constant need for someone else to give you a permission slip to do something. And like, it's something I've been really working on like the last couple of years, is just kind of just being more decisive and like owning my own decisions and not expecting someone else to know better than me about my own life. I think there's like this illusion that I know I certainly have, that everyone else has this secret about life and how it works and how you should be living it, and I have no clue, so I have to ask everyone else, and it's like, no one knows. Nobody knows.
We're all just kind of, yeah, wandering around, bumping into things, trying to find a path. So that sounds great. So you do the life coaching. Gosh, I feel like everybody should do that at some point in their life.
100%. It's like, it's another one of those things like that should be taught in schools, how credit cards work and like how to make decisions based on what you really want. But yeah, I think that's been, and it's boiled down to every aspect of my life as well. It'll be like, my partner Ewan would always be like, oh, what do you want for dinner? And I'll just be like, oh, don't care. Whereas now I'm like, well, what do I want? Maybe I fancy this. Let's make pizza or something. It's just, and then your life's fuller of the things you love because you've like made the decision that they can, that that's what you want, rather than just letting it pass over you.
I guess that's being mindful, isn't it? When people talk about mindfulness, it's about really kind of stopping, checking in, listening. I know that you are really interested in the lunar cycles and tarot and meditation as well.
Yeah, a lot. I think meditation would be the one that's most important to me. I try and do it every day, or just even if it's not like a formal sitting meditation, just to pinpoint a point in my day where I'm like, okay, I'm here, I'm present. Yeah, that's very important to me. But yeah, no, I love all that kind of, what's the good word for it? I don't know. People say woo, but I don't really like that word. But yeah, I love. Yeah, I guess so. They're just tools, I think, that allow us to reconnect to ourselves. Like I use the tarot just as like a guiding decision maker mostly. You knew that you had that intuitive feeling. And that for me is just what I'm trying to tap into with these tools. And yeah, like with the tarot and the moon and the menstrual cycle is just that access to that part of us that we just do not listen to, like 2.5 years ago. And it's so mad for me because your work is so incredible, that you could have, I know what you mean by feeling sad about it, like, oh, what could have happened in those 2.5 years?
It's really trust now, and I used to feel really sad about this and really upset that I hadn't come to things sooner, but I really feel I had to go through all of the different steps to get to where I am, and that I have found things when I've needed them and when I've been ready for them.
And I think also if you wanted to get into like your menstrual cycle as well, that to me has been even more profound an impact on like just allowing myself to be where I'm at. And you were saying, oh, it's just simple, but it doesn't need to be more complicated than that. It is just like we need to rest. We need to stop this like pushing and pushing and pushing. And it's like this illusion that the only way to get somewhere is by pushing and working really hard and ignoring that you're tired. And it's like, no, because it's within this rest space that your ideas start to formulate, and you can have the space to think about these things. So it's actually more productive anyway. Do you follow on Instagram the Nap Ministry?
Yes, I love her. I think it's so political,
Yes,
really.
it is. Like, rest is an absolute rebellion, and it's the same with all this like cyclical living. It's like, it feels to me like a protest against capitalism. Just like, and you're saying it, this whole like this pushing, this masculine energy, like that is great, but not 100% of the time. Like, that should just be like a couple of days in the month where you have that energy and you do push and you do move forward. But then you have to step back and like come back, and it's finding that balance between the two. Then I think that this whole cyclical.
Absolutely, because it's I think it's like, well, when that energy is there, harness it and go with it, and it will be so much more powerful. And because you'll have rested, you'll be really ready for it.
I get this with with my menstrual cycle. If I don't rest when I need to, when I'm sort of premenstrual, I then do not get as much energy when I'm in my ovulation phase. And I'm like, God damn it, I knew I should have rested, and now I'm losing out on all this energy I could have had. Rest. And it's like, yeah, I think it's so informative. It's so important to learn about ourselves and our bodies and how we function in the world to be able to thrive in it. And these are all just tools. And then like the point of like all this is it boils down into everything you do, whether that is your career or being a mother or your creativity. These are all influenced by these behaviors. So super important.
So, I know that you're into tea, and that's also got a link to your partner. And is it your partner's mother's cafe? Has she got, is it,
I'm a
what's.
tea specialist. So I was studying wine, working as a bar manager, and realized like that wasn't for me. I like drinking wine, but I don't like serving it. And I was starting my ideas about becoming an illustrator, and had just met Yuan, my partner, and his mum has a tea and coffee specialist, and she was looking for someone to go work there. So I thought, right, well, I'll move away from wine into this tea and coffee and into retail rather than hospitality. And it was wonderful. I just loved that job so much. It was just such a calmer space from hospitality to retail, firstly. But everything that I'd learned about wine, I could now apply to tea and coffee. And like, there's so many similarities between coffee and wine in terms of like cultivation and tasting, and this like paying attention to your taste buds, which I think is a really neglected sense. And once you tap into that, it just like opens up this whole new world. And yeah, I became this like interest in wine. It became a fascination in like the tea and coffee world, because it's incredible. Like, there's so many layers to it. There's especially tea, like, oh, it's just a beautiful thing to be learning about. So I just got really passionate about what we were selling. And then I think that kind of filtered into my drawing work as well. So I started drawing lots of tea and coffee things.
I see it really tied in, like you talk about how much you're inspired by nature and the sea and plants and flowers and tea, and it seems like a really natural, it's all infused.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like, I think that's the thing, is it's all these threads of your life that seem like they don't make sense. Like, the more you live, they kind of weave together better, and you go, oh yeah, of course, this makes complete sense that I would find an interest in this and things like that. So
What led you to leaving North Wales, considering falling so deeply in love with it again?
Well, I think we can blame the one thing that we can all blame for this year is COVID. this was like so a year later now, I think we're at, and I'd stopped working in the tea shop because my illustration business was taking off really well, and I wanted to focus on that more. And Yuan, who'd also, we met through our love of wine, he'd been working in a wine shop, and he then came and started working with his mum in the shop. So it was like a really good transition. And we were renting a house in the town where the shop is, which is a lovely town called Conway, and we had a cute little house that we were renting. And my big life goal now, because I'm on this path that we go down, and this was the next one, was to buy a house. It was just like, that's what I want to do. Like, how are we going to get there? I'm self-employed, we're renting, so all our money's going on this. And we didn't have a garden. We had an allotment that I shared with Yuan's mum, but because of lockdown, I couldn't go there. So I was just getting frustrated by this small house that we had and couldn't see a way out of it. And I even applied, there's like a few schemes in Wales to help people get on the housing ladder, and I just got rejection, rejection. And yeah, we were in lockdown. Yuan wasn't really able to be in the shop much, so we're both just knocking about in this little house. And I was like, we're being screwed over. I was so angry. I was just like, this is ridiculous. Like, all our money's going on rent. There's no way we can get on the housing ladder. Like, houses are too expensive. There's a big crisis in North Wales with like too many second homes, so no one can buy a home. And just this anger. And we were watching this YouTube channel we used to watch. We ran away in a van for a bit, and we were watching this channel, and they'd bought a plot of land in Portugal. And they said, oh, and we paid cash. And I was like, how have they paid cash? Like, this is silly. Like, how have they managed to do that? And then I Googled it, and I was like, oh, because it's so cheap. And then, yeah, it was just like one conversation where I was getting angry about housing and finding out how cheap land was here. And we just were like, well, let's just move to Portugal then.
And it was as simple as that.
Yeah, it was kind of crazily simple. And sometimes I'm like, maybe we should have taken a bit more time to think about it. But well, our logic was, so the plot of land we bought was the same price as a year's worth of rent and council tax. Yeah, so we were like, well, we've not got anything to lose, because if we just live there for a year, we've spent the same as we have living here. And the world's in lockdown anyway, so we made the decision in September. So it's September, October, so things were quite open when we decided to go. But we were very much rushed. We were like, we need to go, because obviously Brexit was on the horizon as well. So we were like, we need to get there before Brexit. Like, it's very likely everywhere's going to go back into a lockdown. So that's why we made the decision so quickly. It was like, this might be our only opportunity, we've got to go. So we just, I think within 6 weeks we were here. Moments I was like, what have we done?
Yeah, I mean, a huge change in the middle of a global pandemic and so much political upheaval. That's a brave step to make, but honestly, I think the most brilliant step you could make is fantastic.
Run away. But I'm obviously so lucky because that I can work remotely, so that's the only way we can do it as well, is that I can still work.
It's fantastic. You've kind of, again, like you said, that like you kind of designed this life without,
Without
really,
knowing.
yeah, not knowing how. But now, like looking back, it's like, and all of that has led to you being able to now create this beautiful home, because you're off grid as well, aren't you?
Yeah, it's an interesting experience. Yeah, we're very much at the beginning of it, and that like in so we bought the land at the end of November. We got the key, the one key to the barn. And it was so cold, it didn't stop raining. We were just in our van. And we had trouble getting on and off the land, and we just had nothing. And I was like, what on earth have we done? First of all, it's supposed to be warm here and it's not stopped raining. And because we'd had this trouble getting on the land and with the rain, we were like, we can't get off because we have to stay here till it stops raining. So we had just this couple of days where we were just trying to like make fires in the garden to keep warm, or like sheltering in this leaking barn, cooking on our gas stove and sleeping in the van. It definitely at that time I was like, this is the maddest thing we've ever done. I want to go back and I want to get back on this ladder of trying to get on the housing ladder.
I'll pay rent. I'll pay council tax.
You're like, you know what? I don't mind paying rent because I have a shower and a cooker and a bed. I take it back. It's money well spent. But now it's stopped raining and we've done a lot of work over the last 6 months, so it's a lot more
And did you have experience in building in this kind of?
The only thing we built a shed that we got off Facebook on our allotment, and it blew away. So that was the only experience we had, and it was pretty terrible TV on that. But I love figuring things out. I'm quite good at like being like how wood fits together, apparently. So it's a skill I've uncovered. And you were like very practical, so we kind of worked quite well at figuring it out. So now we're still off grid, so we have a battery in the van so I can charge my laptop, but if I need to like scan my work in, I have to fire up a generator just to use my printer.
So this is now like this is adding a whole new dimension to your creative work. I mean, this is a creative project in itself. It's wow.
It's oh, sorry, the dogs are barking. So it's definitely been a challenge.
It sound I mean, I can't imagine a world in which it's not worthwhile, really. And like I've watched your YouTube videos, and at the end I'll put this in the show notes as well. Like I'd love you to share like where people can find you, because not your illustration is so beautiful, and then also then just seeing this journey that you're going on with this beautiful piece of land, and like seeing it changing through the seasons and the different plants growing up, growing and the what is it, a shed, a cabin that you're kind of expanding on, and then you've built somewhere else. It's fascinating and just so sumptuous to look at. And so going ahead, are you planning on staying? How are you feeling after those moments of what the hell have we done? Do you think that this is going to be your long term?
It's cyclical, so but it seems to be every 2 months I have a bit of a breakdown of being like, oh my God, we need to go back to North Wales, this is a ridiculous idea. And then literally the next day I'm like, oh, we're so lucky, this is so beautiful. Like, look at this big garden we've got. We would never be able to afford anything like this ever. I think it's just one of those. I mean, North Wales will always be home, and my family are there, and my nieces, and I miss them a lot. So that's what kind of makes me want to go back. And just the complications of being a foreigner is always there, but that'll get easier with time. So I think currently our plan is to stay. For as long as we're enjoying it and keep building up the project. And the very practical side of me is thinking, well, if we don't like it, we sell it, and that's a deposit on a house we may finally get on the housing market.
It sounds beautiful. I'm really enjoying watching your journey. It's really so fascinating and just really gorgeous. And thank you so much for this chat and for agreeing to talk to me. It's so fascinating because I knew like little bits and kind of markers along the way of your path, but the detail is so rich. And like, I've really appreciated you talking as well about the tools that you use, because like I was saying, it's not just about the logistics of creativity. It's also how do you deal with it emotionally and mentally, and I think that's a huge, huge part of it. So thank you for being so open and sharing.
Oh, thank you. Absolutely loved talking to you. So thanks for listening to all my rambles.
You can find Carissa's work on Instagram at Carissa Tanton or on her website carissatanton.co.uk. You can also follow her off-grid life in Portugal on her YouTube channel Frankie on the Road. I will include all these details in the show notes. Thank you so much for listening to On the Irregular. Please make sure you review and subscribe as it helps other listeners find us.